So with that introductory reading in Luke, we will now call upon Mr. McPherson to speak to us this evening on his topic, Running from God.
Good evening, everyone. Before we get too involved with the talk this evening, to deal with the subject, as already announced, Running from God, I'd like you to all pause just for a minute, just for a few minutes. Close your eyes if you want to, and think upon the situation which you find yourself in now. Think of where are you now in this particular building. So just give thought to that, and I want to see what the reaction is, and it brings into focus the thing that we're going to talk about this evening. It's a question of finding ourselves. So I'll just close my eyes and I'll just wait upon you. Thank you. I think if I could engage all your thoughts at this time, I think the answer would be that we are in a place of worship. Most of you would say to me, yes, that's what I'm thinking. I'm convinced that this building here is a place of worship. But I want to go a little further than that. I want to give emphasis to the privilege that we have this evening, that we are in this place of worship, but take it a little further, we are in the house of prayer. So that gives a deeper meaning to the situation that we're finding. We're in the house of God. And the reason I want to do this, because quite often when we come into a church or a place of worship, we neglect to realize to the full the situation that we're in and the privilege which is ours. And the privilege which is ours is that there is a living God in heaven, the only true and living God, and though we cannot see him, he is very near to each one of us. Why do I say that? I say that because Scripture tells us that this Almighty God has created this the earth in order and form, and not to be just the glory and in adoration of his own power and ability, but he has designed it so that the creatures of his handiwork might have the opportunity to share with him the glory of creation. So when you think about these things, I'm sure that each one of us then comes a little closer to the realization of the privilege which is ours to be in this house of God this evening. God looks down from heaven and he realizes that there are many, many people, both young and old, who have difficulties of life, who are far absent from the thoughts that the God in heaven desires for them to be citizens of a kingdom that he is going to establish upon the earth. Now, this particular time of the year, which is called spring, as we know, is the most beautiful one. In the particular area that we live in, we have gardeners who have devoted their time, free time, to planting beautiful flowers. Outside our house, we have a beautiful array of daffodils and all kinds of different colors. And this is the canvas of our world. The canvas of our world is a beautiful one. We go into the countryside, we can see the beauty of the creation. When the sheep are in the pastures and they're at peace, they have gathered together, they've heard the voice of the shepherd, they're brought together to enjoy the pasture and the living water. We can go and see in the playgrounds of children playing together. Nobody making them afraid because their father and mother is close by to take care of them. We can go into a home and see a family united, no one missing. It's a beautiful scene to see a mother and father with their children enjoying the same meal. But if we, as we have done and we can do each day, if we look a little closer to this canvas or this mural that's painted on the wall, we can see that in the lower area there are ugly scenes. There are black scenes. There are scenes of shadows and of darkness. And this, as we know, is the world that we really live in. These ugly scenes are played out on the streets of Victoria and of Vancouver, which we'll refer to a little later on. Now, when Jesus came into the world, we know that he was the Son of God. He was the light of the world. He was beautiful in his character and the presentation. The people looked upon him and amazed at this man, of his contemplative life, of his purpose of life, and so on. And the crowds came to him. But also, with this beautiful attachment to this Son of God who came out from Nazareth, there was also those ugly and dark scenes. Because he had his enemies. Isn't it strange to see that this man sent from God for the purpose of making people's lives happy, both now in this particular life and also to give to them the gift of eternal life, that they would be opposed to him? But we remember that those who were those enemies who were of Jesus Christ, and various enemies, in their statement, in their accusation against him, they proclaimed his purpose for living upon the earth, the subject that we're dealing with this evening. So I'd like you to open your Bibles to the Gospel of Luke, chapter 15, because we pretty well stay there for the whole of our Bible talk this evening. But it commences in chapter 15 and the verse 1 this way. It said, then the crowds came to him, but then they focused on a certain group of his audience, or the congregation. It says there, then drew near unto him all the publicans, all the sinners, for to hear him. And the Pharisees and scribes, who were the dark and ugly scenes of the canvas of life, said this to him, This man receiveth sinners and eateth with them. He's not what you people think he is. And so in the acclamation at this time, we see that they're proclaiming to the world, Jesus is using these people, his enemies, to emphasize and echo out the purpose of his coming. That he had come to save or find attachment with those who were sinners, who were opposed to God, or who were running away from God. And he said, he shares the table with them. He eateth with them likewise. And so we remember, do we not, that this was the purpose of Jesus' coming. He is, as the scriptures portray him on one time, that he is the door. He stands at the door. We see the connection here between this chapter 15 of the Father waiting at the door and Jesus Christ. He's waiting for people to appeal to him, to come into their lives, that they may find, as it is said, but the son who came home, that he might find themselves. And that is the trouble with a lot of people today in our world. And that's why they don't have the peace and the harmony and the peace of mind, because they haven't really found themselves. They're seeking it by their own means and their own methods. And so we know how this Son of God, Jesus Christ, was so compassionate to the crowd. His whole body and his speech and his proclamation vibrated with this one desire that people would come unto him and live. He was the way, the truth, and the life. Only through him could the people find themselves, and that people could find the wonderful place in God's kingdom when he will return. I just take one of his sayings to emphasize this in Matthew chapter 8 and verse 28. And this is a beautiful language of expressing, showing to us the appeal, the love that this Son of God had for all people, that they might be saved or found. So it says in verse 28 of Matthew chapter 11, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Now the emphasis there is not on, I will give you, come unto me, all you are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. When he talks about, come unto me, all ye that labor, and that's not necessarily the labor of our everyday working time. It's the labor of our minds and our thoughts, and our desire to make things right. We are laboring. And we see that many of our friends and many those that we have associated with, they're just laboring in their life to find an answer to peace and a peace of mind And they haven't found themselves, and they labor in this way, and they try all different avenues to find it. But this is that we know the appeal this evening is here, through this Son, Jesus the Christ, that he has the way. Now, we talk about those people are lost. I, like you, have known many people who have been lost in their lives. They haven't found themselves. The sadness is with a lot of us, all of our situation, it's the young people. And we're not getting at our young people this evening, but young people in general. Adults have generally found their way, maybe not always the right way, but with the young people, it's a struggle, especially in this world. And I have known some tragic cases of individuals, young men, that I have known, being close to, and has spent a lot of in their lives, and tremble at the outcome of their situation. I knew a young man who had been struggling with life, and he was always having a dispute with his father. And he was always not arguing, but discussing with his father that he wanted to find himself, so he would go to his father and ask his father, "You give me the things that belong to me. I want it now. I want to do my own thing. So give me some of the things that belong to me." And this young man, on one occasion, in the evening hour, had a real dispute with his father. And they got to, the voices got loud and everything out. And so the outcome was that he said he would leave him home. "I'm gone. I'm leaving you, Father. You can do what you like. I'm going to do my own thing." And he got onto his high-powered motorcycle, and he left. He went down the highway, and because of the speed, he couldn't navigate the corner. The outcome was, he fell off his motorbike, and he killed himself. How difficult, how terrible this was at this particular time. And so we remember, do we not, that these tragedies happen every day. Recently on our television news, you see the dramatic event of a young man who had not come to his senses, had not come to his own mind, and the outcome was a tragic one. It was terrible. And everything possible was done to prevent him doing this, and yet he went his own way. It's been on the television news more than once. And what it was is there was a young man who was confused with life, and he had his difficulties with it. He knew he was searching for something, but he couldn't find it. And he got angry with the world, and he got disappointed with his home life. And he got into his car, and he just drove down the wrong way on the freeway. There's an interesting little lesson in that, because when he was determined to do this, there was a barricade, there was a barrier put in there. And the authorities, those who are controlling the highways, the schedule, all those kind of things, they put a barrier up there. And he ignored this. The first incident they told there, there was a barricade put up by the father when his son got angry and said, "You know, take your time, just think about what you're doing." And that was a barricade of advice from his father. This particular man, he was so angry, well, and couldn't find himself, that he drove through the barrier, went down the wrong way on the highway, crashed into another car, and as we know, that happened. And this is for us who, in our advancing years, it's more of a tragedy, because we can see the terrible things that are happening where an individual life is being wasted. There are young ones, there are old people in the canvas of life, and God sees, and Jesus Christ sees them in the maze of life. You've all walked through a maze, and you know the difficulty of this, of finding the right way out. You think you do this way and that way, but we know how difficult it is. And this is happening today. Every day in Vancouver and in Victoria, you go down to the different streets and you'll see the individuals lovely young people are trying to find their own way through life. Their own way. It's like it was said of this young man in this parable of Jesus Christ. They couldn't find their way. And so we go down, and they want something better out of their life, so they go into taking the needle. They go into taking drugs. They go on a high and think that's the thing that they're looking for in life. How difficult it is. God is concerned about them, and he no doubt lets his word be known to them if they are looking to him in this particular way. So this is what we have here this evening. We have Jesus Christ. He's telling us a similar tragedy. He's telling us a similar tragedy to the young man who left home on his motorbike. He's telling us a similar tragedy of a young man who got into his car and drove down the wrong way. He's talking about the young people down on Wall Street now who are taking drugs and the needle, and they think because of that liquid, it will give to them the order of the way to go to find the fullness of life. And so as we have listened to the reading this evening, you'll be familiar with this particular parable. Now this short story, most commentaries tell us, and most people who are Bible students tell us, that this short story of the lost son is one of the greatest love stories of all time. One of the shortest stories of Jesus, but it is one of the greatest love stories of all time. Because there was a son who his father loved, who was lost, but now he was found. Can you imagine the heartbeat of that father when he saw his son coming to him? And he realized that his son had come to his senses. He now accepted the fact that his peace of mind and his future would belong into the house of his father. And so what the translators, most of us have heard this story from our Sunday school days, and they always tell us, this is the story of the prodigal son. Now, most commentators, and I think that's not the right title that should be given to it. And most of them agree that instead of the prodigal son, it should be a found son. And I think that would demonstrate more to the full what this parable, this little story that Jesus tells us about. Because you remember in the conclusion, the last verse of this chapter 15, when the father has a discussion with the other son who feels that he has become short of the things that he should receive, he was also lost. It wasn't just the one who ran away, but this one at home, he was also lost because he hadn't come to his senses probably as to what had happened to his brother and the way he should deal with his brother and the way he should acknowledge what his father had done for him. So it says in the last verse of this chapter, it says, read verse 31 for connection. He said unto him, son, this is the one that has stayed home, son, thou art ever with me, and all that I have is thine. You found yourself, or you think you found yourself, but maybe you haven't. Maybe you consider more of what is happening here. A demonstration of a merciful God who has restored your brother back into the house of your father. So he said unto him, and he said unto him, son, thou art with me, and all that I have is thine. It was meet that we should make merry and be glad, for this thy brother was dead and is alive again, and was lost and is found. And that's the way it is with a lot of people today. Some of the people that I've worked with, some of my friends, are technically they're dead. They haven't come to the fullness of life, the understanding of life. They haven't found themselves. They're still wandering in the maze of life, trying to find a solution as the way out of this predicament and to find themselves and to come out into the sunshine and the beauty of this world. And so the story is a simple one for us, but it's just a barrier. And young people attach themselves to this story of this parable of the found son, they will see that God is saying to you, I know you all want to go. I can speak for many of my friends. We're doing some stupid things in our youth. Not that we want to talk about them now. But there's a period of time, believe it or not, there's a period of time when I was lost. There was a time in my life when in my 16 and 18 when I was lost. I was lost. And you know where I was found? I was found because I looked and I always knew that God was not very far from me. I always knew that if I leaned upon God heavenly, He would take care of me and reorder my life. I had not really at that particular time. This is a story that I don't tell very often because I'm ashamed of it, but it can be enlarged on to show to you the loving kindness of a God towards a young man when he was lost, but now he is found. And why do I say this? Because one of the little things in that period of time, I remembered the teaching of this parable. And so this parable was a barrier to me. Because it constantly came up in front of me and said, no, don't go that way. Don't go that way with that son, but stay home. Just stay home and be with your father and all will be well. And so this story is a simple yet heart-wrenching one about this man who had two sons. The youngest one was, as we know, we can go into this home. We can go into his home and sit at the table and there's a big discussion going on. The father was a religious man. The father was a man of God. And he brought his sons up to be this way, to think wholly upon the law at that time. They had the law of Moses and they had the teachings of God and he would tell his sons. And these sons knew the law. And this particular son knew the law for what it says concerning inheritance. And so he'd listen to his father, and his father would read to him from the law of Moses, and he'd get to this section, he'd say, "Ah, father, under the law, I to receive an inheritance. My brother will get more than me, but I'm going to get an inheritance. I'll get a third, he gets two thirds, that's okay, I can't do anything about it, but that inheritance, it belongs to me." It was an inheritance that he had to wait for. He could not have it at that particular time under the law or the conditions of God. It is a thing that you work out your salvation. It is an inheritance that motivates you to move forward to the right situation that you can come before your father and say, "That's my inheritance, and that's what you receive." And so it was on this particular occasion, this son was a very popular one in the area at that particular time, and his friends told him of the world that was out there. And his friends told him of the glitter of the different towns that are around the Tyre and Sidon, and told of the wonderful things that happened there, how that you can really get yourself together. You can find yourself in these cities. And his son dwelt upon it and thought, well, it's a lot different to be in a home, laboring in the field, doing things for chores for my father and so on. There must be a different thing in this life, and there must be more excitement to it. So as we know, as we're familiar with this story, he went to his father and he said to his father, isn't it time that I receive the portion, verse 12? And the younger son of them said to his father, "Father," it wasn't a favor, it was a demand of this son. "Father, give me the portion of goods that have fallen to me." And his father reluctant to do it. And sometimes, some of those things we pray for, we really shouldn't have them. But this father this time divided them up. He said, "Okay, this is my son, he's staying home. You will receive this when I die, particular time in the future." The younger son said, "No, father, I want my inheritance now. I want the fullness of life now. I want to wait. You're still a young man. I don't want to wait another 20, 30 years. I want my inheritance now." And so your father decided that he would give it to him, and with it was the prayers of this father that his son would be sensible in the gift that had been given to him. So what happens is we know in verse 13, we'll go through it in this particular way. And it says that he didn't immediately take his inheritance leave. We're told that he still hung around the house and thought, well, maybe my father's right. Maybe I should stay in. And then his friends, he got into the wrong company, and his friends said, nah, let's go. We'll go to Tyre, we'll go to these cities, and you'll have a life that you never thought you'd be able to be a part of. And so it says in verse 13, not many days after, the youngest son gathered all together, took all his belongings, took his journey into a far country, and there we know the outcome. It was a tragic situation. He went into a far country. And that was the mistake, and that's the mistake of people, those who have wandered from God. They've traveled too far into a far country. And the further they travel away from the house of the Father, the further they travel away, the worse the situation is getting back to it in this particular way. So he took all the possessions and went into a far country. Now it says in verse 13, he says, not many days after, the young man gathered all together and took his journey into a far country. Now in the Greek, what I'm told in the commentaries that I read, in the Greek it should leave, he left or he leaves one of his own people, the house of God. So there's a deeper meaning in that particular rendition of it in the Greek translation. He leaves his own people. And that is what happens. When people leave the people of God and the house of God, they go into a far country, and the more they stay away, the further they'll get away, until in time they can't even see the house where they lived. They can't even see their father anymore. He was a shadow, now he's disappeared altogether, and they are fending for themselves. What a most uncomfortable and a sad picture that we have here. He wasted his substance. And that can happen, as same with those who wander from God. What is their substance? Their substance is the life to live. Every day is a gift given to us. That is the substance that we're given to us, is life itself. And we can waste it. And if we waste it, then we'll finish up like this son here, this young boy or young son of his father. Because it says here that in the conclusion of verse 13, it said, there he wasted his substance with righteous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in the land, and he began to be in want. And what he did, he was down rock bottom in his life and in his living conditions. So he joined himself to a citizen of that country. There he made a big mistake right there. He should have joined the citizens of God. He should have looked and prayed toward the house of his father. He should appeal to God, the God of Israel, as they would know at that time, to provide for him his needs, to save him out of it. So this man who was a Jew, or Jewish, under the law, and he knew it, he ignored the law altogether, and we're told that he went and he worked for a farmer and helped him to feed the swine. Such a condition that he started to eat the food that he fed to the pigs in that way. A terrible thing for a Jew to do. He wasted his substance. The portraits of that man, I think, he is painted on that canvas, but it's written in the Psalms. And I think there's the writing, as it is written in Psalm 34, I think the psalmist portrays the man as he was at that time. And so this is what it says in Psalm 34, verse 6 and 8. And it said, this poor man cried. You ever seen a man cry? A terrible thing to see. I saw a man cry once. was the hardest thing for me to face. This poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all his troubles. The angel of the Lord encampeth around about them that fear him and delivereth them. Young man, this is what you should do, the psalmist would say. O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man that trusteth in him. O fear the Lord, ye his saints, for there is no want to them that fear him. And that's how the psalmist portrays this man at this time. So coming to himself, as it says, he realized there that the only place he should be in is back in the house of his father. He knew there that he would have the safety, the security, the peace of mind, and the benefits of this life, and also that he would then fuse himself back into the promises made to the fathers of old. Because this canvas of life is also covered in different colors, and those colors belong to the rainbow. And the rainbow tells us of all the promises that God has made in mankind in different colors. And so this is what he did. This man had a courage, and this man had a courage which not many people can have. This man had the courage to say, that is it. That is it. I'm a dead man. I'm a dead man. I will go to my father because I have learned from you that my father is merciful, he's kind, he's long-suffering. I love my father and I know he will treat me in a proper way. And so this is what he's told. Now, I have quite a few friends who were believers of God. I have a few friends who are committed to serving God. But for some reason, they, like the young man, they went off into a far country. Not literally, but spiritually, they went into a far country. And then conversing with them, said, yes, we know the error of the way. We're going to come back. We're going to come back to the house. You know that is the hardest thing to do. That is the hardest thing for anyone to do, is if they leave, is to return, for more reasons than one. Because first of all, their vision is not clear, they cannot see the house, and they question and afraid of what the reaction of their father will be. I have known of people even to this day still struggle with this. I talk to them, and they say, yes, but we got to come back. You know, that's not an easy thing to do. And so we're not told about this young man's journey from the farmer that he'd been working for, feeding the pig. Now he is going back. He had all that distance to walk. He had time to think. That is not an easy thing. The scripture doesn't tell that because maybe it's not necessary for it to be written into that story. But we can see it now because we've been there. It's a difficult thing. It's not an easy thing. And many people are still lost in the maze of life because of it. Now, what did the young man have to do? What reaction or what change in his life did he have? Well, Jesus tells us what he had to do. This was a young man. He could have been in his 18, 90, 20. He had been a strong man. He worked on his father's farm. He had the ability to do wonderful things in his own type of life. He was a strong man. He could take care of himself, he thought, when he left home. But this is what Jesus says. Jesus says, if you come back to me, if you come to me, if you have found yourself, this is what you have to do. Matthew 18, verse 3. And Jesus now is, his disciples come unto him concerning a certain subject. And in verse 3 it says, Jesus says to his disciples, if you want to dwell in my house, my father's house, this is what you have to do. Verily I say to you, except you be converted or change your ways and redirect your life, turn around, recognize you're at fault, he said, you become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven or the house of God for eternity. So that's what he's saying. This is what this young man had to do. This robust man, 6 foot maybe built, and a heavy set man, capable of doing everything, he had to stoop down and become like a little child and listen to his father again and hold the hand of his father for support at this particular time. And we know this is what the young man did, didn't he? In verse 21, he came unto his father and said, Father, and he wouldn't be standing upright at that time, I'm sure. He'd fallen at the feet of his father, and he said, Father, I have sinned against heaven. I have sinned against the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and in thy sight I am no worthy to be called thy son. What are you going to do with me, Father? And his father said unto his servants, we shall cling to him again, and we shall show him how much we love him by the things we are going to give him. This is the God in heaven today, who a God who wants to appeal to us and show us that if we cling to God, he will give us an abundance of gifts that couldn't be found in the cities, as the young man thought, of Tyre and Sidon, in the glitter and glamour of this life. He said, I will give you numerous gifts to show you you were lost, but now you're found. Now to the young people, if they're still with me, I'd like to ask you a question. When this young man went back home, and his father, almost as we know, would say he was welcome, and I was disappointed with him, and he said, I'm no more worthy to be called thy son. But his son said to him, his father said, no, you're still my son. You lost, but you found. What's the first thing the young man had to do? Any young person want to tell me? Remember the condition they're in. He'd been working amongst the pigs and the swine. He'd traveled all this way. And now even the dogs attacked him at his father's house. The servants couldn't recognize him. And now his father recognizes him. And he has to do one thing straight away. What was it? Anybody else? What would he have done? No? Okay. It's written between the lines. Because his father said to him, verse 22, but my father said to the servant, bring forth the best robes. So what did he have to do? That's right. He washed himself. So this young man had repented of his ways. He'd come to his father. The next move that he had made, he had to be baptized, or he had to wash himself of the filthiness of the world. Cleanse himself before he could put on the robe that his father had. The father said, no, you're not going to give him somebody else's robe. You are going to give him the best of the robe in the house that's not been saved for the time you come back to me. So you can see how beautiful this picture is all coming together. This young man washed himself before he could put on the robe. He immersed himself in the water, and what he did, like the fig leaves in Eden, he took his old rags and his old clothes that were of another life, and he dropped them on the sides of the waters of baptism, and he left them there. And they were taken away by the sun, and they were burnt, and they were no more part of his life. Now, you see, it is known that in the Roman world, when a slave has committed or fulfilled his commitments, there are certain ceremonies that are carried out. And it's the same with our colored people, the slaves, when they worked down south in America. After a period of time, they were given their freedom. And their master would give them, the master would make sure they washed themselves, and then the master would give them what they call the freedom clothes. They gave them a new outfit, the certain amount of money to be able to settle themselves, sometimes a piece of land to settle in. They gave them, and they gave them these freedom clothes. And that's what happens. When a person is baptized, he comes out of the water of baptism, he leaves the old clothes by the side, and Jesus puts on a new robe to him, and he goes forth and he's recognized as the family of God. Just as the young ones today, and we want to be identified sometime with the fashion of the day in our clothes and such like. It happens. And this was the case with this young man at this time. So first of all, he washed himself, and then he, as we know, he put on the robe, and then his father gave him the ring, which was, as we know, would recognize that he was of this family. The signet of his ring with his father's name, it would recognize he belonged to family. And then there's another interesting thing that I kind of smiled as I read this. He says then, his father said to him, "You're barefooted. You're barefooted. You can't be around in my house that way." So he gave him a pair of shoes. Now, I've always had a bit of an obsession, for one reason my dear wife knows, to want to buy shoes. I just like the style of shoes and all that. It's one of my weaknesses that I have. I don't want to get rid of any of because I like it. But some of our young people, they do. I have a grandson. He's got, I think, about 20 pairs of shoes. And why are they? Because each shoe is identified by certain things. And that's it. And that's okay by me if they were doing that. And it's okay by, it's interesting. Kind of, I had to smile when I saw that. And you know why he gave him a pair of shoes? Because slaves and servants never wore shoes. When he came home, he was shoeless. Very nice, sold his old shoes, worn them out. And he was a servant to other people. He was a slave. He was a servant. And he had no shoes. The people who live in the house of God and in that father's house, they wear shoes because they're not slaves or servants. And they wore these shoes to recognize they belong to the family. And so it's wonderful how this worked out in this way. And so this is what, just to bring this, wrap this little beautiful love story up, we now see why Jesus was telling this story. He said, because I tell you this story, and I'm going to tell you two more stories, and it's all to do with what you're saying to me. You're telling the world that I've come to save sinners. And I have. Thanks for proclaiming it. That saved me doing any commercial. You've done it for me. I've come to save sinners, or those who have gone going the wrong way and have yet not found themselves. Thank you very much. And that Jesus would tell them in this particular way. Those who followed Jesus learnt well. Those who followed Jesus, as we know, saw the barriers barriers which would stop them going the wrong way. And the barriers were the words and the vice of the one who had gone before them. And so it's interesting, I think, that we should... I love the advice of the Apostle James, who was a friend of Jesus. And he tells us this way. He said, if you have trouble finding your way, what you do, you look at a map. Now, with our cars that we have, we have a screen there, and it punches there and tells you what to do and where to go and where not to go. In this particular way, James didn't have all that. The Apostle James didn't have. But he said, this is what you do. In verse 25 of chapter 1, he says, "But whosoever looketh into the perfect law of liberty, whosoever looketh into the law or the mirror of liberty, which this young man finally did in the law of Moses, if you look into the perfect law of liberty and continue in it, he being not a forgetful hearer, but a doer of the work, this man shall be blessed in his deed." And that's what the young man finally did. This young man, he finally took his life in an active way, and he, as we know, returned. A wonderful thing to happen to him. And so this is what James is telling us, and the Apostle Peter, as we know. The Apostle Peter was lost. Can you imagine that? The Apostle Peter was lost. Makes me feel a lot better, the situation now. The Apostle Peter was lost more than once. He got into a far country. Jesus said, "Where are you, Peter?" He said, "I've gone further away from you, Jesus. I'm sitting by this fire, and I've hidden my identity because I don't like the situation I'm in." It's not an easy thing to be a follower of Jesus Christ. And Peter knew that. But Peter, we know, later on in his life, he found himself, and he was a committed man, and he never left the house of God from that time on. So we have this confidence that he will be in the house of God and enjoy all the bounties that God will give to him when Jesus returns. Now, we say this to our friends, and they say to us, well, what should we do, Mac? I had one friend, and he says, I've got all this problem and difficulty. What shall I do, Mac? I said, you pray to God. You go one-on-one with God and ask God, and I'm convinced he will tell you. He said, I can't pray. I can't pray to God. How can I pray to somebody that I can't see? How can I pray to a God that you talk about, all so powerful? He's not going to listen to me. I said, you pray to him on a one-to-one basis, and I guarantee your prayers will be answered. And this is what the Apostle Peter instructed the thousand that turned out to listen to him. Thousand people in Jerusalem were lost. They'd been in other countries. Now they were coming to Jerusalem because they knew that maybe in Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, they could find themselves. And so they came to them in this particular way. So we read in Acts chapter 2 and at verse 36 this. Therefore let all the house of Israel know assuredly that God hath made the same Jesus whom you have crucified, both Lord and Christ. Now when the people heard it, they said, ah, now we know. This is the way we've got to take care of our life. This is the formula for a peace of mind and contentment and the insurance for the future. Now when they heard this, they were pricked in their heart and said unto Peter, and he said to the rest of the apostles, men and brethren, what should we do? And Peter would say, why don't you do the same thing as the lost son, the found son? Why don't you do it? They would be familiar with that son. Why don't you do the same as him? Come out of that far country. Come back to your father. Come back to the God of Israel, because he's waiting at the door for you. And then he will give you the bounty of his storehouse. He will give you a new robe. He will give you the rung of identity of belonging to the family of God, the royal family of God. And he will put shoes on your feet that will enable you, though you may not believe it, to walk to the city of Jerusalem. It's a long way off maybe for some of us. But with those shoes, you will be able to walk and find the kingdom of God. And so it is to all those who may be affected by this message, not that it comes from me, but it comes from Jesus, because Jesus represented God, and God was his Father, and God has a house in store for us when Jesus returns. And when Jesus returns, he doesn't want to find us lost in a maze of life, fumbling, trying to find a way out, trying to find ourselves. But he wants us to find us, as we know, knocking on the door, which is Jesus Christ. And in our attitude of mind, Jesus will recognize us, and he will say, come home, my son.